It's 11-3052, Anaya Aguilar versus Holder. Whenever you. Good morning, Ms. Baldini-Poderman.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Maria Baldini-Poderman, and I represent Petitioner Anaya in this case. There are two main issues presented this morning before this Court. One is an issue that the respondent has conceded is an open issue. That deals with the issue of whether this Court has jurisdiction over sua sponte denials of motions to reopen by the Board of Immigration Appeals. The second issue is whether the Board erred as a matter of discretion, but also as a matter of law, in denying the sua sponte motion to reopen based on ineffective assistance of counsel, in addition to changed country conditions in Mexico, as well as this Court's Champion versus Holder decision.
Here is my problem. I'm not aware of any circuit that has found jurisdiction to review the denial of sua sponte reopening. Is there any case that you are aware of
that has granted review over a denied motion to reopen? No, Your Honor, not at this time.
I have to tell you, this is such a sympathetic case. And there's no question that you truly have made the absolutely best case possible for the notion that this case is extraordinary. But most of the examples that, you know, most of the circumstances that have been cited, the terrible violence in Mexico, the financial and other hardships that they will face, these are the same circumstances that, until our immigration laws are totally overhauled, are what many, if not most, people are also facing.
Your Honor, if I may respond to that. I believe this case is set apart from the government's floodgates argument, basically that every Mexican coming before an immigration court or this court would have the same claim. Not every Mexican in removal proceedings has been subjected to ineffective assistance of counsel or even notary fraud. If we go back and we look at how this individual was placed in proceedings, he was the subject of Antonio Perez's notary fraud.
What you're saying is he otherwise wouldn't have gotten caught.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so somebody advised him, if you expose yourself to the authorities, you're going to be out of here. They didn't do that.
No, Your Honor. He was defrauded by an individual who was not an attorney who advised him he was actually eligible to apply for a benefit adjustment of status based on his uncle's lawful status in this country. There was no basis for which the visa petition should have been filed. And under the Ramos settlement, which we had included in our briefing and our motion to reopen, under the Ramos settlement, the government acknowledged that it should not have accepted applications for adjustment of status, which were filed without any underlying valid petition or basis. This was an issue that arose here with the district court, with the Chicago District Immigration Naturalization Service.
When did it start? How long ago was that? What year was he?
He applied for adjustment of status, Your Honor, in 1999. Mm-hmm. And putting this case back into context of what's called Section 245I of the law, there was an initial creation of 245I, which allowed people to get their green cards within the U.S. without departing, going abroad, and consular processing. That was created in 1994. It first was set to sunset in September 30th of 1996. After that, it was extended again until January 14th of 1998. And again in 2000, there was an extension by Congress, which went until April 30th of 2001. During this time period, particularly as the first sunset came up in 96 through 2001, there was a lot of fraud going on in the community by notaries. And Mr. Anaya fell subject to that. The Immigration Service should have initially rejected the application for adjustment of status, not receipted it, not processed it to place him in removal proceedings. after he, and so he applied in 1999, and then in 2000, the INS denied it because there was no valid basis for
it. But if he had good counsel and done everything, was there any way he was going to stay here?
In 2004, Your Honor?
In whatever time we're talking, I'm really going back to the beginning, but I had a case very similar to this last week, and it's the same situation, and I realize that there's a lot of emotion and everything else here. As I understand it, that he was working?
He was working, Your Honor, and if he had been counseled properly, an employer could have filed what is called a labor certification application for him. That would have grandfathered him under Section 245I of the law, so that upon approval of that, he could then apply for an immigrant visa in the future along with an adjustment of status application. So, yes, Your Honor, if he had been properly counseled prior to obtaining the services of Mr. Perez, he may have had the opportunity to apply for adjustment of status under Section 245I of the immigration law.
No, I checked last week with the government, but apparently under some circumstances they can actually get a Social Security card.
Yes, Your Honor. Once a work permit is issued, once an application for adjustment of status has been filed and it begins to process, an individual is then eligible to apply for a work authorization known as an employment authorization document.
And that's when they can get a Social Security card. The reason I bring that up because that's the difference between being able to work legally and not being able to work legally. It's parenthetical, I'll admit, but it seems to me this is one of the problems we have with all of the immigration things. Since a lot of times there are fake Social Security cards. Are there withholding for, I don't know, where he worked or where? And I understand his wife isn't legal either, is she?
No, Your Honor, she is not. And I'd like to address that point. In 2004, the immigration judge found in her decision that the children could stay with the undocumented wife in the U.S. if Mr. Anaya were to return home. This court since then has issued a case called Champion versus Holder, in which this court said that the immigration judge or the board must take into account whether the spouse is also undocumented and subject to deportation. We raised this in the motion to reopen that from which the petition for review is currently pending, and the board did not anywhere in its decision take into account this court's precedent regarding what is the status of the wife and whether she would remain here.
And she's not being deported either, right?
Presently, she is not in deportation or removal proceedings, Your Honor.
How old are the children?
Today, Your Honor, the children are 11, 8, and 6. The two older boys are straight-A students and have been, and we provided the documentation with the motion to reopen. Mr. Anaya has also filed his tax returns, which were included in the motion to reopen. He incorporated his handyman business under the state of Illinois and has filed the appropriate documentation with the state, as well as his tax returns annually.
And that's why I ask about, in tax returns, about Social Security number.
Your Honor, in order to file a tax return, you don't need a Social Security number. The IRS has something called an individual taxpayer identification number, which an undocumented alien can apply and obtain in order to file their tax returns.
And then what happens with that? They just ignore it? I'm perplexed about the whole immigration fight here. We talk about the things about who's legal and not, and it seems that there's a lot of people who find ways around it and just stay here. And it's very frustrating, at least for me. I'm glad to hear that at least they have whatever somebody gave them about this.
Oh, Your Honor, as far as I understand it,
because we have an E-Verify, for example, and that's supposed to be based on a Social Security number.
Yes, Your Honor. That was created after Mr. Anaya was put into removal proceedings. It is more recent. And the way I understand it, there is a firewall between the IRS and the DHS. The IRS is interested in collecting the taxes owed, whereas the DHS has a different mission.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I'll reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
I'll give you an extra minute or two.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Walters.
May it please the Court, Tiffany Walters for Respondent, the United States Attorney General. Anaya seeks review of what is effectively his third motion to reopen. proceedings filed over 5 years after his removal order became final. The issue at hand isn't the underlying equities of the case, but instead whether or not the court has the ability to review this request that the agency on its own motion exercise its authority to reopen proceedings.
What if the board denied sua sponte reopening on a ground that was patently discriminatory? Would there still be no jurisdiction for us to review? I mean, could they just go wild?
To the extent that there's a due process argument, there's a second problem in that he's seeking cancellation of removal, which is a discretionary form of relief. So he doesn't have a liberty interest in that underlying form of relief in order to state that due process claim. In terms of whether there was a factual or legal error, this court in Sevilla noted that if the court has jurisdiction to review where there is a factual and legal error, then it would have backdoor jurisdiction to an unreviewable claim. Essentially, it would only have jurisdiction to review whenever the agency erred, but not when the agency was correct. This, by nature, is fundamentally different from a statutory motion to reopen. Petitioner relies heavily on Kakana to call into question this court's standing precedent in Pilch. However, Kakana explicitly declined to state whether or not its ruling had any impact on the jurisdiction or the reviewability of sua sponte reopening. In Kakana, it dealt with statutory motions to reopen, which Congress has specifically provided for and provided specific limitations on when an alien is eligible to file one.
So do you think what bearing, if any, do you think the comment decision might have on our jurisdiction in this case?
Under Kukana, 1252A2B definitely does not restrict this court's jurisdiction to review motions to reopen, and that is clear. But the question is whether or not it has...
Calma, not Kukana.
Alma.
Calma.
I'm sorry. Can you refresh my memory on that? Calma, I believe, had to do with Judulong. The immigration status of the qualifying relative's parents. In that regard, I'm sorry. To what extent are you referring to Calma?
You know, in the reply brief, he cited our recent decision in Calma. That's the December 5th, 2011 decision, which had to do with our jurisdiction to review the denial of continuances. And I wondered if you thought that case had any bearing.
As far as continuances, there are specific standards in terms of whether or not a continuance should be granted or denied. In this case, this is purely the agency's ability to act in its own discretion to grant reopening where the statute would otherwise not allow for reopening. It is truly an unfettered exercise of discretion, as opposed to continuances where there are certain factors that the agency has identified as appropriate to consider in determining whether it is warranted. As far as sua sponte reopening goes, the only thing we know is that the board considers whether or not there's exceptional circumstances. And that's an appropriate position to be in, given that if the board was allowed to entertain any motion to reopen that was untimely or numerically barred, it would essentially backdoor the requirements created by Congress in terms of statutory motions.
You know, this case is a microcosm of everything that's wrong with our immigration laws, it seems to me, because, you know, we see a lot of cases involving people who are involved in criminal activity. This is a remarkably fine little family who have worked very hard, paid their taxes, children are doing so well. This is really the tragedy of our immigration system. Very, very upsetting, very hard, sickening. Case.
Obviously, this case presents sympathetic circumstances. Unfortunately, the statute doesn't provide the agency with any form of relief that the petitioners would be eligible for. In its sua sponte motion, although it wasn't, or in its decision declining to exercise sua sponte authority, The board considered petitioner's arguments regarding the cancellation of removal application and said even if we had all this before us, it still wouldn't be enough to grant them cancellation of removal. The agency is limited to the relief that Congress provides for it to provide for aliens, and in this case there's simply no relief that it can bestow. And that's really beyond the agency's jurisdiction to do anything about it and rests really with Congress to provide relief in these sorts of situations, as sympathetic as they may be. If there are no further questions, I would just ask that the court would dismiss the petition for lack of jurisdiction.
Your Honors, I would like to expand a little bit more about the Kalma versus Holder decision that this court did issue actually the day before the Judulong case was issued by the Supreme Court. In Kalma, this court said specifically that it is worth recalling that a central theme in Kukana was the importance of judicial review to protect the procedural fairness of the agency process. As the Supreme Court put it, motions to reopen are a procedural device serving to ensure that aliens are getting a fair chance to have their claims heard. When this case was previously before this court, the board had not actually decided the claims of ineffective assistance of counsel because the board decided that it was an untimely motion to reopen. The board has not yet considered the ineffective assistance of counsel claims as well as the actual application for cancellation in an open forum. When Mr. Anaya was before the immigration judge, his first attorney submitted bare bones physical presence documents. No witnesses were brought to court. With the first motion reopened by Attorney Fischotti, it was a bit haphazardly put together. She admitted her mistakes. With the last motion to reopen, everything that is relevant to a grant of cancellation or removal was provided with the motion to reopen. We submit, Your Honors, the board abused its discretion in this particular case in refusing to grant the motion to reopen. We request that this court find that it does have jurisdiction over the motion to reopen, find that the board abused its discretion, and remand this case for a full hearing.
We'd be the first court to do that, correct?
Yes, Your Honors, you would be the first court to do that.
With 11 circuits.
Yes,
on the other side.
However, you know, the recent decision in Judulong was one where only one court had held in favor of the alien on 212C relief, and the other 8 circuits were overturned. This court has the opportunity to carve out a distinction on the sua sponte jurisdiction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much as well, Ms. Walters. Case will be taken under advisement.